this week, being the Shabbos before Purim, we read Parsha Zohar, the Parsha, the end of Parsha Kisese. The Torah talks about the mitzvah of Zechirat Maisa Amalek, remembering what Amalek did, and the mitzvah of destroying Amalek. And we read the Torah from Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Tezvav, discusses the story of Shmuel and Shaul when Hashem commanded to go and destroy Amalek. Now, there's a lot to say, but what I would like to do is I'd like to try to, as quickly as we can, go through all the psukim and perhaps say a few short observations about the psukim, and then perhaps go back and discuss the whole story, the story as a whole, and some ideas about that. So let's see if we could do that. Let's start, actually the Sardim start from Pasuk Aleph, Perek Tezvav, Pasuk Aleph. The Ashkenazim start from Perek Tezvav, Pasuk Beis. So we'll start here from Pasuk Beis. Source number one on the source sheet. Koyomai Hashem Tzvokoi. So says Hashem, Pokavti Eis Asher Oso Amolik LeYisrael. I remember that which Amalek did to the Jewish people. They ambushed Klal Yisrael on the way when they were leaving Mitzrayim. And if we just skip down to number three, Atal Leich Hikisa Es Amalek, now go and fight against Amalek, Haharam Tem Es Kol Asheloi, and destroy everything that is his. Don't have any compassion on him. You should kill me'ish avisha, man and woman, me'olel ve'ad yoinek, from a young child to a nursing baby, mishar ve'ad seh, from an ox until a sheep, migomol ve'ad hamar, from a camel until a donkey. Destroy all the people and all the animals. You should kill them all out and utterly destroy them and eradicate them from the world. That's the command that Shmuel, who's the Navi, gives over to Shaul, who's the king, in the name of Hashem, and they should go and destroy Amalek. And the Biskarov points out that there's a mitzvah to destroy Amalek takes effect when the Jewish people got into Eretz Yisrael. When the Jewish people, when they arrived and they conquered Eretz Yisrael, then the mitzvah of destroying Amalek took effect at that point. So he asked, why was it necessary for there to be a special command from Hashem to destroy Amalek? As soon as they came, we already know. We're going to read the parasha tomorrow, the end of Kisese, that there's a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. That mitzvah only takes effect once the Jewish people go into Eretz Yisrael. But once they were in Eretz Yisrael, why was it necessary to have a special command from Hashem to destroy Amalek? They should have had to do it right away. And the Biskarov suggests that perhaps the mitzvah of destroying Amalek is dependent on having a specific command from Hashem. Even though there's a mitzvah, the mitzvah is to destroy Amalek, that mitzvah always exists, but there's a tenai, there's a condition. Hashem has to inform us when's the proper time for it to be done. Only when Hashem tells us it's a proper and appropriate time to fight Amalek, that's when we're supposed to do it, and otherwise not. And he points out that it seems to be, in the words of the Rambam, There seems to be a basis for this. If you take a look at source number two, the Rambam in Perek Hay of Hilchos Melachim, the Rambam writes two different mitzvahs. He says one mitzvah, Hanavocha Dalid, the Rambam talks about the mitzvah, the command to destroy the seven nations that were living in Eretz Yisrael when the Jewish people came. He says mitzvah Shasei L'Hakarim Shiva Amomin, the mitzvah, positive commandment to destroy the seven nations. Shenemer says Hakarim Tacharimim, utterly destroy them. The Rambam concludes, the chol shebo le yodo yechon mehen, v'loi harogo yoyver v'loi sase. And anyone who meets up with someone from one of these seven nations, and he didn't kill him, he's transgressed aloi sase. He was oyver aloi sase, for keeping them alive, he's not supposed to keep them alive, so if he encountered a person from seven nations and didn't kill him, he's transgressed aloi sase. That's what the Rambam says about destroying the seven nations. Amalek is not one of the seven nations. But the Rambam continues in Halacha Hey, And he says, "Lechem mitzvah ta'asei la'abed zecher Amalek." There's also a positive commandment to destroy any any memory of Amalek. Shinema, as it says, "Timcha zecher Amalek." You should wipe out, erase any memory of Amalek. Mitzvah ta'asei l'ukar tamid masav horoim v'arivosoy. And it's a positive commandment to constantly remember his bad deeds and his and the fact that they ambushed the Jewish people, the Oirei Vasa, in order for a person to arouse the hatred towards Amalek. That's why a person has to always remember it and mention it. A person should constantly feel those feelings of hatred and animosity towards Amalek. But there's no mention in the Rambam that if a person encounters someone from Amalek and he doesn't kill him, X, Y, and Z. Doesn't say that he was Oivra Loisase, doesn't say that he was Mevatel and Ase, doesn't say that he didn't do a positive commandment, doesn't say that he violated the Lois Aseh. Such mention when it comes to Amalek as there is when it comes to the seven nations. So it says in Biskarov, it seems from the Rambam, that when it comes to the seven nations, any time a person would encounter someone from those seven nations, he'd be obligated to destroy him. However, when it comes to Amalek, that's not the case. For Amalek, there's specific guidelines, there has to be a specific command from Hashem, now is an appropriate, now is the proper time to destroy Amalek. Any other time, one is not obligated to fulfill that mitzvah. So says the Briskerov, and that's why over here there has to be a specific command from Hashem to destroy Amalek. So what is Shaul HaMelech told to do? He's told to kill Amalek, everything, men, women, children, and all the animals as well. Now why was it necessary to destroy the animals of Amalek? So perhaps the most partial, simplest shot in the Mepharshim is that the obligation is to destroy Zecher Amalek, memory of Amalek. And if the animals would be left around, so then people would say, Amalek would still be remembered through their animals. People would say, this is an animal from Amalek. And therefore, the memory of Amalek wouldn't be completely eradicated without destroying the animals as well. Someone would say, oh, this is a horse from Amalek, that was Agog's donkey, so on and so forth. In order for the memory of Amalek to be completely eradicated, it was necessary to destroy all the animals as well. Take a look at source number 4, top of page 2, Rashi, among other Mepharshim as well, they say a different explanation. Rashi says, Mishor ba'abseh, from sheep to, from an ox to sheep, all the animals, why? Shehayu balik shofim. Because Amalek, they were involved with kishuf, with sorcery. They were able to change themselves and make themselves look like animals. It's a very practical reason why you have to destroy the animals. Because if you don't destroy the animals, if you leave the animals alive, what's going to happen? You look around, you'll see animals and leave them alive. And really, those things that look like animals are really people. So in order to, according to Rashi, it seems like really there was only a necessity to destroy the people of Amalek. However, in order to ensure that all the people of Amalek were destroyed, it was necessary to kill the animals as well to make sure there's no people who took on the appearance of animals. The Ralbag, source number Fahey, the Ralbag later on, I'm not sure why he writes this later on, but later on he discusses why it was necessary to kill the animals as well. And he says that Hashem wanted that the Jewish people should not benefit from the possessions of Amalek at all. He wants them to destroy Amalek, but don't benefit from their possessions, destroy all those possessions as well. Why? Hashem wants to make it clear what the purpose of sending the Jewish people to fight against Amalek and to destroy them was. And the purpose was not like a normal battle that we can take over their land, that we could take their possessions, take the spoils, we can make ourselves wealthy, we can grow our empire. That was not the purpose. Hashem wanted it to be clear that the purpose of this was a commandment from Hashem to take revenge from Amalek for what they had done to the Jewish people when they left Mitzrayim. So that, in the future, other nations should see what happened to Amalek, and they should know not to start off with the Jewish people. Hashem wanted it to be absolutely clear what this war against Amalek was all about. That the war was about punishing Amalek, taking revenge from Amalek for what they did to Jewish people. And the way to bring that out was eradicating all their possessions, okay, destroying everything, not benefiting from them whatsoever. Then what was the purpose of fighting against them? What was the point of destroying them if you're not going to take the possessions? That became clear that we're taking revenge for what they had done to the Jewish people earlier when the Jewish people left the Mitzrayim. And then it'll be clear to others that if you start up with the Jewish people, then Hashem will ensure that you get taken care of, that they're destroyed as well, and other nations won't start up with the Jewish people. It's interesting that if you look at the end of the piece, Rabak suggests that perhaps that was the same idea. We find in the Megillah, if anyone was in the PZ the other night, Rabbi Yalkut was just talking why when the Jews in the time of the story of Mordechai and Esther, so they were given the right, they were given permission to fight against their enemies. And the pasuk says about Bizalei Sholchot Yodam, they didn't touch the spoils, they didn't touch the booty. Why not? So there's different explanations, but the Rabak suggests that perhaps it's for the same reason. They wanted to show that their motive in fighting against their enemies, against the Haman followers, whoever it may have been, was to destroy Amalek. To show that they're taking revenge against Amalek, for Amalek had done to Jewish people earlier in history, and therefore they didn't take any of the spoils. It shouldn't seem as if their purpose was to be able to be able to make themselves wealthy from the spoils, from the booty of their enemies. The point was to take revenge from Amalek for what they had done to Jewish people earlier in history. Let's continue. Let's move along. Vav Pasuk Dalet. So Shaul receives his command from Shmuel. Vayishama Shaul et ha'om vayishkidein batoloyim basayim elef raglim. So Shaul vayishama. There's actually in the Mefarshim, there's different explanations of what Vayishama means, but it means basically either that he called out to the nation, or he gathered the nation. It's the same idea. Either he called out to them to gather them, or Vayishama seems to be he made them hear. So either he called out to them, or the point was to gather them together, to gather the nation together. Vayishkidein, and he counted them, batloyim. So the word batloyim is a number of different explanations. The most simple explanation, as you take a look down in the Mesudos, number 7, Ois Zayin, says the Mitzudos, he says, Batloyim, Shem Mokoyim. It's the name of a place. So, he says, he counted them, and the place where he counted them, the place where he gathered them together, and counted them was called Floyim. That's the simple explanation. However, the Gemara in Yuma has different understanding. If you look in Surah Ches, the bottom of page 2, Gemara in Yubtechaz Yuma, Chafezim, what they say, Zom Rav Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak says, Osir Limnois Yis Yisroel, Afilu Dvar Mitzvah. It's prohibited to counter Jewish people even for a matter of a mitzvah. The Gemara learns out that there's a prohibition from a pasuk, I believe it's in Hosea, the pasuk says, Asher lo yimonev lo yisofer. The Jewish people, they can't be counted. The simple understanding of the pasuk seems to be that that's a fact, that they're so numerous they can't be counted. So the Gemara learns, Asher lo yimonev lo yisofer, they shouldn't be counted. The Jewish people should not be counted. And the Gemara there tries to find a source for this. The Gemara tries one other place, an earlier place in Tefer Shmuel. First, the Gemara says that you can't prove it from there. The Gemara says, Elo rather mehocha from here. What's the source that is prohibited to count the Jewish people? So it says, the source is from here, from our pasuk, Vayishama Shol Esa'om, Vayishkidein Batloim. That Shol gathered the people, and he counted them Batloim. So what do we see from this pasuk? So how do we see from this pasuk that it's prohibited to count the Jewish people? If anything, it seems the opposite. It says he counted them. So what does that mean in the text? Rashi there on the Gemara, Rashi over here says the same thing. Vayishkidei batloim, what does that mean? Sivom, Rashi explains what happened over here. What does it mean that Shaul counted them batloim? Sivom, he commanded them, Okachas kol echod tzlem yisoyin hamelech. He commanded each one to take a sheep from the sheep of the king. The king had a large flock of sheep. Uvol lemercha v'nimnu atloim. So they came to a place where the Rashi over here, I believe, says, they then deposited those tzloim in a designated place, and once all the sheep were deposited in this new place, so then they counted up all the sheep and they knew how many Jewish people there were. So according to Rashi and others, the understanding of the Gemara Maseches Yuma, the pasuk saying over here is that Shaul counted the people using sheep. He didn't actually count the people. He didn't do a head count or a finger count or a hand count. He counted the Jewish people with sheep. How so? So he explains, and others explain as well, that each person took a sheep and then they counted the sheep. However they counted the sheep, either they put the sheep in a different place, or maybe each person walked through with his sheep. Whatever the case was, The point is, the Gemara says, you see that you can't count the Jewish people because the counting wasn't done by counting the people, rather the counting was done by Yifkidei and Batloim. The counting was done through sheep. The sheep were counted, not the people. So again, so you have the Mitzvah, he says that the Tloim is the name of a place. Shaul counted the Jewish people in a place called Tloim. From the Gemara, it seems that there's a different understanding of the word Tloim, which means that with the word Tloim means sheep, that they counted them using sheep. Instead of counting the people, since that's not allowed, therefore they counted the sheep, and that's how they knew the number of the Jewish people. In the Targum, Yonatan ben Uzziel here on the Pasuk says a very interesting thing. The Targum says, Umaninun, we counted them, Be'imrei Tischayo, with Karban Pesach lands. So Abai Benel, I saw quoted that Abai Benel says, doesn't mean that anything to do with the Karban Pesach, it's just a way of referring to sheep. Since sheep are used for the Karban Pesach, so the Targum refers to it as Imrei Tischayo, sheep, which is the thing that's used for carbon pesach. But the simple explanation, the Radak clearly understands like this, the intention of the Targum is that Bimri Pischayin is he counted them by counting the carbon pesach animals. They brought carbon pesach, the Radak explains, they brought carbon pesach in the oil moyed, in noise. So they brought the carbon pesach there, and they counted how many carbonoid pesach were brought, and that's how they knew the amount of Jewish people. That's what the Targum seems to say. And the Targum is very disturbing. Because there's no way to get an accurate count of the Jewish people by counting the Karban Pesach. We know what's the halacha of the Karban Pesach. A person, according to some opinions, we don't allow a single person to have his own Karban Pesach. There has to be a group of people together. They have a Karban Pesach. They all join together for the same Karban Pesach. That's the way the Karban Pesach works. We have to make sure that the meat's going to be finished. We make sure that a number of people or even a number of families joined together for the same Karban Pesach. So by counting the Karban Pesach, he can't possibly get an accurate count of the Jewish people. Because in each Karban Pesach, there could be a different amount of people who joined together on that Karban Pesach. So it seems to be not an accurate way of counting the people. And I saw actually in Kedush Yifei Noif on the Medrash Shmuel, there's a Medrash called Medrash Shmuel, discusses the book of Medrashim on the book of Shmuel, the papers from the papers called Yisei Nois, and there he asks this question as well. So I think that perhaps the answer might be based on the words of the Chassam Sofer. It's a very interesting thing if you think about it. There's an issur, there's a prohibition to count the Jewish people. So we're not allowed to count the Jewish people. Yet we see in Parshat Kisisa, which we read just the other week, that the Jewish people are counted through the Machzah Shekel. In that case, you have to count it through sheep over here. Seems to be ways of counting the Jewish people, through some other, item, not counting the people themselves. However, the Chassam Sofer raises the obvious question. The Pasuk says, actually, Yimonev lo yisafer. I mean, the Jewish people shouldn't be counted. So what does it make a difference if I actually count them pointing to the person, or I count them by counting the money that each person donated, or I count the sheep that each person gave over? At the end of the day, it's Yimonev yisafer. At the end of the day, the people are counted. What does it make a difference if I count the people through the people themselves, or I count the people through the money, or through the animals? At the end of the day, we're arriving at the number of Jewish people that there are. So it doesn't seem to make any sense. What do you gain by not counting the people, by counting the money instead, or by counting the animals instead? It doesn't seem to make a difference. So the Chassam Sofer says, very big Kiddush. The Chassam Sofer says that the reason why we're allowed to count using the money is because you don't end up with an accurate count. Inevitably, amongst all the people, everyone's supposed to give half a shekel in the case of the Parshas Ki Tisa. So inevitably, someone gives a little more, someone gives a little less. Something happens when everyone's giving in their half shekel, inevitably you're not going to get an accurate count. And so since we can't be certain that when we count up the money that we get an accurate count, that's not considered to be an exact count. Since we have to suspect that perhaps the count is off a little bit, it's not considered an exact count. So perhaps that's the pshat, that's the explanation of the Targum here as well. Because perhaps the Targum held like the Chassam Sofer, if you want to say it like that, he held that you can't get an accurate count. No matter what you do, whether you count the people, you count the money, you count the animals, it doesn't make a difference. You can't get an accurate count. Since you can't get an accurate count, so perhaps either it was convenient, it was Pesach time, so it was convenient time, to count through the Korban Pesach. That was a convenient way to do it. Or perhaps Shaul wanted to orchestrate a specific way to ensure that the count will definitely not be accurate. Whichever way you'll say it, but the point is, it was intentional that the count should not be accurate. Specifically, the Targum says he counted through the Korban Pesach lamb because he wanted to ensure that the count won't be accurate, following the opinion of the Chatam Sofer, who says in the Tshuva is in the Korban Tshuva, it's in the Ches, he says that the opinion of the Chatam Sofer that the count cannot be accurate. Even if you don't count the people themselves, you count some other item, which will give you the exact number of the people. You can't do that as well. Using a different item doesn't help. You have to find a way of making the count inaccurate. So it could be that's why, according to the Targum, Shaul HaMelech chose to count specifically through the Korban Pesach lamb. In this way, he was sure the count would be inaccurate, but at least it gets a good idea. So the pasuk says that there were Mosayim Elef Ragli, 200,000 foot soldiers, that's the count that they got, Vaser HaLofim Etish Yehuda, and 10,000 men from Yehuda. So what's the significance of 10,000 men from Yehuda? Give us the count of all the Jewish people, then you tell me there's 10 from Yehuda. So Rabbeinu Yeshaya, the Rid, in his commentary, here says that the people of Yehuda, they were disturbed by the fact that Shaul, who was not from Shevet Yehuda, who was from Shevet Binyamin, was chosen to be the king. The tradition was that Yehuda, the kingship, was supposed to come from Yehuda. And therefore, Shevet Yehuda was not very pleased with Shaul being chosen as the king. And therefore, they weren't so interested in following his orders. Therefore, although really Shevet Yehuda was a large Shevet, and the amount of people they sent to the war should have been more than 10,000. Out of 200,000, 10,000 is a small amount. Considering there's 12 Shvatim, and Yehuda was one of the bigger Shvatim, Yehuda should have sent more people. And the Pasuk is bringing out the fact that Yehuda sent less people than really they should have. Proportionally, they should have sent more people, but since they weren't too happy about the fact that Shaul was the king, and they weren't so happy about following his orders, therefore, they sent only 10,000 men, less than they really should have. Let's move on to source number 10, page 3. The next pasuk says, Vayovoi Shaul Adir Amalek. Shaul came to the city of Amalek, Vayorev Banachal. It says, Vayorev Banachal. Banachal means in the valley. Vayorev literally means that he quarreled or he fought in the Nachal. That seems to be the most partial, simple explanation. The Targum understands that it means that he prepared his troops in the Nachal. Most of the Mepharshim, the simple understanding is that he waged war against Amalek in the Nachal in the valley. The Radak, which it seems that's followed by the English translation over here, is that they made an ambush. They set up an ambush in the valley, and they came near the city, and they set up an ambush in the valley. I saw one other explanation. Someone says that it means that they provoked Amalek in the valley. They provoked Amalek, and Amalek should come out to fight against them. I don't remember right now who says that. Okay. However, the Gemara and Yuma, once again, gives us a different explanation of these words. Vayorev Banachal. He fought in the valley. What does the Gemara and Yuma say? Source Yud Aleph. Gemara quotes the pasuk Vayorev Banachal. He quarreled in the valley. Omrav Moni. The Moni says, Al Iskei Nachal. That he quarreled about something to do with a Nachal, something to do with a valley. What does that mean? B'shol Shomal Le'akodesh Boruch Hu L'shol. At the time when Hashem said to Shol, Leich Vikisoyas Amolek, go and fight with Amalek. Omar, Shaul said, Uman nefesh achas omro toiro. Havei egla arufa. What do we find when it comes to one soul? If we find a person dead between cities, so the Torah says that we need an atonement. Bring an egla arufa, take a young calf, bring him to the Nachal Eson, some barren valley, and you break its neck there. It's called a foshut halolu al achas kamo v'kamo. Certainly for all these souls that will get, certainly there is a necessity for an atonement. The Gemara continues, and he further argued, v'im odam chata, and if the people sinned, behemo machata, the people sinned, they come from Amalek sinned against the Jewish people, they fought against them unprovoked, they fought against the Jewish people, so fine, but the animals, why kill the animals? The animals sinned. And if the older people, you'll say that they sinned. Kitanim machotu. What are the young children? What do they do? The poor innocent young children, what do they do? So Yosla Baskoil, the Amroloya, the heavenly voice came out and said to him, Al Tahit at the Karbe, quoted the Pasuk in Koheles, don't be so righteous, don't be more righteous than Hashem. Hashem commanded you to destroy Amalek. You should go destroy Amalek, and don't be so righteous, don't be merciful. Go ahead and destroy Amalek. The Gemara says, what does the Gemara say? The Gemara says, Ayoras Banachal means he made an argument. He presented an argument, so to speak, against Hashem. And his argument was, Hashem destroyed the entire nation of Amalek with all their possessions and all their animals. Shaul says, how could that be? And Shaul says, he makes a kal v'chomer from Egla Arufa. What's the halacha of Egla Arufa? The dead body is found between cities. No one knows how this person was killed. So we measure how close this dead body is to each city, and the zakenim, the elders of the closest city, are required to take an egla, a young calf, and bring it to the Nachal Eson, to this barren place, and they break its neck there, and they have to, through that, they get an atonement for not giving this person the proper care, for not escorting him out of the city properly, so that he should be safe. So Shaul said, if the Torah, we find by one person that's killed, the Torah requires an egla arufa to be brought, so certainly, if we're going to kill out all of Amalek, certainly that's something that would require an atonement. And the Gemara says that further, Shaul argued that it doesn't seem to be proper to destroy all these people and destroy all these animals. It doesn't seem to make any sense. But he was wrong. The Basil came out and said, no, you're wrong. Al Tis Tzadik Harbe. Don't try to be so righteous. Don't try to be so merciful. Go and do what Hashem told you to do. This Gemara is very difficult to understand. And to be honest, I don't have a satisfying explanation of the Gemara. I'll tell you what different sources say about the Gemara, and I'll tell you what the problems with each explanation are, and you can take it from there on your own and decide what you want to do with it. So the Rabbeinu Chananel on the Gemara is pretty much, as far as I know, the only rishon who really explains the Gemara, and he says that that Shaul was making the following kal v'chomer. As we'll see shortly, Shaul did not kill the choicest animals, the choicest sheep and the choicest cattle. They were spared, they weren't destroyed when Shaul and his army fought against Amalek. So Ben Hananel says that Shaul made the following kal v'chomer. He said that we find that if one down dead, it's necessary to bring an egla arufa, take this young calf, as a kapara, as an atonement. So if we're going to kill out so many people, certainly we're going to need an atonement. If we're going to need an atonement, then we need to spare some animals so we could use those animals to get our atonement. A very practical matter. It wasn't such an ideological issue. Of course, I mean, the Chananel's explanation was a practical issue. The halacha in the Torah is that for one person found dead, we need to bring an egla arufa to get an atonement, to get a kapara. So if we're going to kill out so many people, certainly we need a kapara, we need an atonement, therefore we must spare some animals that we could use them to attain our kapara. That's a bit of Chananel's explanation of the Gemara. Now there are a number of problems with this. First and foremost, the Gemara doesn't flow according to that, because then the Gemara continues to say, Dim Adam Chata, Behemah Machata, if the people sin, did the animals sin, Dim Gedolim Chatu, Ketanim Machatu, if the older people sin, did the young children, did they sin? It doesn't flow. First, he's making a practical argument. Well, we need to spare some animals in order to attain an atonement for killing all these people. But then, how does that flow into his next words, where he seems to make an ideological argument that it doesn't make sense to kill all the animals and to kill the young children? It doesn't seem to flow. That's one problem. The next problem is that there's an issue that's raised by the Sfasemes. In his comments on Gemara, he says, first of all, there's no concept of an egla arufa, or he discusses whether there is a concept of an egla arufa when a non-Jew is found dead. He says, for a non-Jew, there's no concept of egla arufa. So how could Shaul bring into discussion the mitzvah of egla arufa, that a person's found dead, that we have to bring an egla arufa for a kapar, for an atonement? It's completely irrelevant to Amalek. Amalek is non-Jews, and there's no... The Sfasemes discusses it, so there are others who say clearly, they quote clear sources that there's no concept of Negla Arufa by a non-Jew. So it's completely irrelevant. How does Shaul bring in the concept of Negla Arufa? Definitely in any Syrian to discuss Amalek. It doesn't seem to work. Another question you could ask is that there's no comparison between Negla Arufa and what Shaul's intentions were. Shaul's intentions, as he makes very clear later, they spared the animal to sacrifice them as karbonim. And Negla Arufa is not a karbon. It's not a sacrifice to Hashem. It's a procedure that the Torah requires them to do to attain a kapara, to get an atonement. But it's not a kapara, it's not a sacrifice to Hashem. There's no blood sprinkled on the Mizbeach, there's no parts of the animal burnt on the Mizbeach. It's not a karbon. So how could Shaul compare that to saving animals from his karbonis? One has nothing to do with the other. And one last question, if Shaul indeed felt that they would need a kapara, they didn't need an atonement for killing out of Amalek, so he didn't need to spare the animals of Amalek. They had their own animals, right? We just saw before, right? Shaul counted all the people with the animal. He told everyone take one sheep from the king's flock. So that means he had thousands and thousands of sheep. So he needs to save the animals from Amalek. If your problem is, get an atonement. Do what you're supposed to do. Kill out all of Amalek. And then you'll go, and you'll bring your animals, you'll bring your karbana, your atonement from your own animals. Why do you have to save the animals from Amalek? So that's, I think, four or five questions on that explanation of the Gemara. I'm sure there's good answers to these questions, but I'm not aware of them, and no one who I was able to speak to about it had any good answers to these questions either. So that's one explanation. Problematic. Okay, so there's another explanation which seems many different forum seem to accept this explanation of the Gemara, despite the fact that it's contrary to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of the Gemara, but they understand, we'll see in a moment, the Medrash in Kehelet seems also to be more in line with this explanation. And they say that Shaul's point, he wasn't making a serious Kal V'Chomer here. Actually, the Stam Sofer in one place, he calls the Kal V'Chomer Shal Shtus. It's a foolish Kal V'Chomer. Stam Sofer seems to clearly be of the opinion that this Kal V'Chomer isn't meant to be a real halachic Kal V'Chomer to be taken very seriously from a halachic standpoint. Rather, Shaul's intention, according to Gemara, was Shaul was bothered by this notion of destroying, wiping out the entire Amalek. It didn't seem right to him to kill out the entire nation and all the animals. It just didn't seem right. It didn't seem proper and appropriate. He says that the Torah is so sensitive to murder that even one person is found dead and we have to, the elders of the city have to come out and they have to bring their La'arufa. The Torah is so sensitive to that, then certainly the Torah should be sensitive to the destruction of the entire nation, men, women, and children, and animals too. And therefore, Shaul felt that it was not proper, it was not appropriate to kill out the entire nation of Amalek and all the animals. It didn't seem right. How could such a thing be? It doesn't seem to be in line with other things we find in the Torah, the Torah's sensitivity to murder, to killing people. And according to this, the Gemara flows better. He makes the Kal V'Chomer for Negla Arufa, which is not meant to be a real halachic Kal V'Chomer, to learn out any specific halacha from it. But the point was to bring out the sensitivity, how concerned the Torah is with murder, and therefore it doesn't seem proper in this case to commit so much murder to kill out so many people. And through that, from that, it flows into Shaul's argument that in Adam Chata Behemah Chata. It flows then. And furthermore, forget about, fine, the people, if you could justify killing the people, what about the animals? And even if you could justify killing the adults, what about the children? And still Shaul was told that they know Alpi Tzadik Harbe, don't be so merciful, Mr. Shimon, hopefully we'll get back to this at the end, if time allows, which hopefully it will. Shaul is told, no, don't be so merciful, don't be smarter than the Rabbanu Shalom, don't be smarter than Hashem. Hashem said kill him out, and that's it. So that's the other explanation which many different Svarim, many different sources seem to go with this understanding of the Gemara. It was a simple ideological argument that Shaul said it can't be such a thing that the Torah should command us to kill out the entire nation. So the animals, men, women, and children, doesn't seem to be appropriate, doesn't align with what the Torah says. So, I don't think there's five questions on this explanation, but there's one big question on this explanation. The one big question is that, as we'll see soon, the only things that were spared from Amalek were some animals, the choicest animals, and Agog, the king of Amalek. Now, if Shaul was really concerned, if Shaul was really bothered by destroying the men, women, and children, and who's destroying everybody, and that's where he, so to speak, went wrong. So then, why didn't he save women and children? Why do we find that he only saved animals and agav? So according to the Rabbi Hananel's explanation of the Gemara, we understand why he saved specifically animals. Because the whole point was, we're going to need an atonement, so he saved animals. Again, we have some questions about that, but at least it seems to fit into the story. The story that Shaul saved animals, that fits in well. If you say his argument was he didn't understand the whole business of killing out everybody, then why did he only save animals? Why didn't he go ahead then and save women, children? Why didn't he save them? And in one place, Chassam Sofer seems to write that he did save women and children, although there doesn't, I could not find any source in earlier texts for that idea. doesn't seem, we'll see from the Pesukim, you can be the judge yourself. The Pesukim seem to clearly indicate that besides the animals in Agog, no one else was spared. So if Shaul's feeling was that it's not right, it's not merciful to kill or oust all the men, women, and children, so why didn't he save more people? Okay, those are the questions on the two explanations of the Gemara. Maybe you have a different explanation of the Gemara, maybe you have answered some of the questions, but those are the explanations of the Gemara as far as I know, and those are the problems with them. Let's continue. So if you just take a look at the source Yud Beis, the Medrash Shehelis pretty much says the same thing, except it leaves out the Kal V'Chomer part. It leaves out the Kal V'Chomer part, which seems to point to the explanation of the second explanation that we gave, which is that argument wasn't the halachic argument, wasn't the real Kal V'Chomer. His argument was merely an argument of what's right and what's wrong. Just read through it quickly. Is going on the pasuk in Kehelis, which says, "Al tihi tzadik harbei v'al tzachim b'yoser." Don't be so righteous and don't be so smart. Al tihi tzadik harbei. What does that mean? Don't be so righteous. Yoser mevayracho. Don't try to be more righteous than your Creator. Don't try to be more righteous than Hashem. Medaber b'shol. Talking about Shol, says the Medrash. The Chassid says, "Vayovei Shol adir Amolek." Shol came to the city of Amolek. Vayorav banachal. So what does Vayorav banachal mean? Reb Huna of Reb Benaya Oimer. So Reb Huna of Benaya say, "Hitzchil medayin hu k'neged boyer." He began judging against his Creator, and he said, "Ve'omar," and he said, "Kachom Hakadosh Baruch Hu." So said Hashem, "Leich v'kisas Amalek." Hashem commanded us to go destroy Amalek. "Im hanoshim chatu, hanoshim achatu." The men sinned. What do the women do? The women don't go out and fight wars. The women didn't come out to attack the Jewish people. It was only the men. "Ve'atasma achatu." The children. What was their sin? "Ve'abokor v'shor achatu." The cattle, the oxen, the donkeys, what did they sin? So the Medrash, it seems pretty clear that Shaul's argument was merely an argument of how could we go ahead and do this? How could we go ahead and destroy the entire nation of Amalek? It doesn't seem to be the right thing to do. And again, Yosta Basol V'Amra, the heavenly voice came out and said, "Al tihitzadik harbei, yoshmi bayracho," don't be so righteous, don't be more righteous than your Creator.
I mean, God created all of this.
Good.
He wants to destroy it. Who is Saul? But Saul was the Melech. And it may be that on some level, part of the sin was, since I am the Melech on earth, I know more on what should be.
Right now I'm trying to present the angle of what Shaul's reasoning was. What his sin was, we'll try to get to later, but we're going to have in order to get there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'll be here until Shabbos and it's Long Friday. Mm-hmm. Let's try to move a little bit here. All right, so that's what it says in the Medrash. Again, we have two explanations. Try to explain the Gemara and try to explain the Medrash. We have some difficulties, but we'll leave it at that. Let's continue along. Source Yud Gimel 13. The pasuk continues. Vayomer Shaul el Hakeni. Shaul now says to the Keni. The Keni, Chazal tell us, as descendants of Yisroi, "Lechu, go, suru, turn away, v'dum mitocha Amaleki, go down from amongst Amaleki." The Shaul was about to fight the war against Amalek. He wanted to ensure that the Keni, the children of Yisrael, they should be safe, right? He says, "Pen al oisivcho imoy," right? The Keni lived amongst Amalek, lived near them. Said, "If you don't leave, then maybe you will be destroyed together with Amalek." Right? So he sent out some planes, dropped some leaflets, and said, "Go away, because we're going to be attacking Amalek. We don't want to hurt you." Why did the Keni get such treatment? Ve'atalasisa chesedim kol b'nei Yisrael ba'aloisam mimitzroyim. And you, not you yourselves, but your forefathers, Yisrael, did kindness with the entire Jewish people when they went up from Mitzrayim. And indeed, the Kenim, they followed the orders of Saul, and they left Amalek. What was the kindness that they did with the Jewish people? So again, there's a number of explanations over here. The Medrash says, in Yodalit, says, Vayim Mishol, Akeni L'chusuru Ridu, quoting our Pasuk, says, V'chi'im Kol Yisrael also chesed, did really the Yisrael do kindness with the entire Jewish people? V'haloyli also Eli and Moshe L'vadoi. He only did kindness with Moshe himself. That's the Medrash's question. Medrash's question is, that Yisrael only did kindness with Moshe. Elo Lamed Chol Rehadis, come his teachers, should call Misha Oysa Chesed and Mechem Yisrael Yisrael, that anyone who does acts of kindness with one of the great leaders of the Jewish people, Malon Olav Ki'ilu Oysa Chesedim Kol Yisrael. Hashem, the Torah considers it as if it's with the entire Jewish people. So the Medrash is a little bit cryptic. It's not clear, again, what exactly was his kindness. The Medrash is absolutely convinced that the kindness was only with Moshe, but what exactly was his kindness? So there's actually, in the Mepharshim here, there seems to be a difference in opinion. Rashi says, it's referring to when Yisrael joins the Jewish people after Kriyas Yamsuf, Melchamas Amalek, they fought against Amalek. So the beginning of Parshas Yisrael says, Yisrael heard all the wondrous things that happened, and he went to join the Jewish people. So it says there, when he came, they made a souza, they made a meal, a banquet for Yisrael and Moshe and Aaron, so that Rashi understands it's referring to that meal, that souza. This is a bit difficult, because what kind of kindness did Yisrael do for anyone? It's Chazal say that Moshe was the waiter, he was serving everybody. What exactly was Yisrael's kindness in eating a meal with Moshe and Aaron and the Zikna Yisrael, like the Pasuk says? So that's a bit difficult, but that's what Rashi says, as you can see in Tefmod. The Moshe and Aaron and all the elders of the Jewish people, they benefited from his Seudah. It's not clear exactly why it was Yisrael's Seudah, but that's how Rashi seems to understand that it was Yisrael's Seudah, and they benefited from it, and that's the way in which Yisrael benefited Moshe. Again, it's a little difficult. The Medrash says, Moshe Levadoi, and this seems to be Moshe and Aaron and Zikne Yisrael. There seems to be a number of difficulties with Rashi's explanation. That's what Rashi says. The Radak says it's referring to when Moshe Rabbeinu fled Mitzrayim after he killed the Mitzri. Moshe killed the Mitzri. He found out they found out about it. They wanted to kill Moshe. Moshe fled to Midian. Moshe encountered the daughters of Midian by the well, and he protected them from their attackers. The daughters came home early. Yisrael said, "What are you doing home so early?" And they said that Ish Mitzri Hisilonim Yad Haroyim, this Egyptian man, he saved us. What did Yisrael say? Kirem loyzei halachem. Go call them and let him eat with us. He's going to marry one of our daughters. But Yisrael, when Moshe was there, he was a fugitive. Yisrael took him in. That's how the Radak explains that Yisrael did kindness with Moshe. And because he did kindness with Moshe, the Medrash tells us, considers that he did kindness with the entire Jewish people. There's a bit of a difficulty with that, since Ba'aloysam Meret Mitzrayim. What does the Pasuk say? That he did kindness with the entire Jewish people when they went up from Mitzrayim. So it's a little bit difficult. They weren't going up from Mitzrayim then. So perhaps it was a preparatory act for them going up from Mitzrayim. But once again, it's a bit difficult how to fit that into the Pasuk, that he did kindness with them when they went up from Mitzrayim. That took place before they left Mitzrayim. So again, a little bit difficult to understand that. However, if you take a look at the Mitzudais, in Tes Dayan, he seems to not be going with that Medrash, but the Mitzudais says, an explanation that will work nicely in the Pasuk, he says, Asiso Chesed, you did kindness, Al Yisrael Yeomar. It's being said about Yisrael, not the Keni themselves, not the nation themselves, rather their forefather Yisrael. And the kindness was that he gave the advice to appoint judges. So you told the whole Yisrael, it was the kindness of the entire Jewish people, to make it easier for them that they shouldn't have to stand and wait for Moshe from morning till evening. So he makes it pretty clear that he understands that the Pasuk means as it says. He did a kindness to the entire Jewish people. We're not referring to a kindness that was done to Moshe And we'll learn a lesson from here that a kindness for the leaders of the Jewish people is a kindness to the entire Jewish people. You understand that it was a kindness directly to the entire Jewish people. It was a kindness for Moshe as well. Moshe didn't have to sit all day and hear the Jewish people's problems and judge on their cases, and they also didn't have to stand all day waiting for him. So, according to the two, this was a kindness to the entire Jewish people. Okay, so they get the Kenya out of the way. Let's continue. Yud-Zayin 17, Pasuk Zayin says, Vayach Shol et Amolek, Shol fought against Amolek, Mechavila Boyachosh, from Chavila, from a place called Chavila Boyachoshur, until when you come to Shur, to a place called Shur, Asher Afnei Mitzrayim, which is near Mitzrayim, giving us a little bit of a geographical idea of where this war took place. Of course, to me it's meaningless, but someone who is familiar with the geography of the time, it's meaningful. So, Vayispois et Agag Melech Amolek Choy. So, Vayispois, he grabbed, or he held on to Agag, the king of Amolek, he kept him alive, captured him alive, Ve'eskol Ha'am Hefrem L'Sicharev, and the entire nation he destroyed by the sword. So again, you see over here in the passage it says the entire nation besides for Agag was destroyed by the sword. So it seems to be that only Agag was spared and not the other people. So again, that's where the difficulty is in saying that Shaul felt that they shouldn't kill out all the women and children, that's because they didn't sin, so then why did he kill them out? Okay, fine. Vayacham oyel Shaul v'ha'om al Agag v'amitam atzoin, Shaul and the nation, they had compassion, and they spared Agog, V'amitav Atsoin, and the choicest sheep, the Habokar, and the cattle, the Hamishnim, means, a number of different explanations, either they're super fatty, that their skin is doubled over from fat, it comes from the language of Shnayim, too. Hamishnim is that they're doubled over with fat, or is there the second child, which I guess is, there's a certain quality of the meat of the second child of the animal. Alternatively, the Radak quotes the Targum as saying that Mishnah means that they were fattened on their own. Balakarim, Karim also means fat sheep. So Karim either means regular fat sheep or it means that they were fattened up by people. Okay, whatever it is, it means choice fattened sheep. Valkal Atoyiv, and on all the good things, the Ogla Harimam, they didn't want to destroy them. And everything that was nimvizav nomes, that was inferior and weak, that they destroyed. That was choice, strong and fat, that they saved. That which was inferior and weak, that they destroyed. That's what they did. So again, over here you see, what did they take compassion on? What did they spare? Again, it was only Agog and the animals. It wasn't women and children, at least it's not mentioned in the pasuk. There's no indication whatsoever that there were women and children spared. One suggestion, perhaps, although it still doesn't answer the question fully, is we mentioned before from Rashi that the Amalekim, through the Kishuf, through their sorcery, they were able to turn themselves into animals. So perhaps they turned themselves into animals and the women and children were spared by turning themselves into animals. But it still doesn't answer our question, because then he didn't take compassion on the women and children then, he took compassion on the animals. So that doesn't really fit. Okay, moving right along. Now Hashem speaks to Shmuel, the Novit, saying, Nichamti kihem lachti es Shol. I regret, so to speak, that I made Shol the king, lemelech, kihem lachti es Shol lemelech, and I made Shol the king, kishov me acharai, he has turned away from behind me, from following me, vestavorai lo hikim. So he came. He didn't fulfill my word. Vayichal Shmuel, that angered Shmuel. Shmuel was bothered. Vayizak el Hashem kol aloylo. He cried out to Hashem the entire night. And Masudi says, he cried out to Hashem, he was davening for Shaul. Shmuel wanted it to work after Shaul, so he was davening for Shaul the entire night. Vayashkein Shmuel lukra Shaul ba'boiker. In the morning, Shmuel got up, and he went out to go and to find Shaul. He went out to look for Shaul, to meet up with him. Now you got the Shmuel Lamar, and was told to Shmuel saying, Bo Shol HaKarmelo, Shol came to Carmel, V'hine Matziv Lo Yod. And behold, he has established Matziv Lo, he has established for himself Yod, a place. Either a place to divide the spoils or the booty, or the Medrash says that he would establish a place to build a mizbeach there. And then Shmuel is told that Shaul then turned and he passed through and he went down to Gilgal. So he was Shmuel was given an update of Shaul's travels. First he went to Carmel, and there he split the divided the spoils there, or he built a mizbeach there. And then Shaul turned and he passed through. He went down to Gilgal. So now he knows where to find him. So Shmuel, the Navi, goes and he finds Shaul the king. So how does Shaul, when he sees Shmuel, what's his reaction? Shaul says to Shmuel, King Shaul says to the Navi, Shmuel, Baruch Atah Hashem, blessed are you to Hashem, which the Mitzvah explains that means Hashem should bless you. Because all this came about through you, Hakimaisiyas about Hashem. I have fulfilled the word of Hashem. Shaul's greeting words are, Hashem should bless you, because this came about through you. What has come about through you? I have fulfilled the word of Hashem. Perhaps the strangest words in the entire thing. I feel the word that, on one hand, we see a clear command, destroy all of Amalek. The prophet still tells us clearly that he didn't destroy all of Amalek. And yet, Shaul comes to Shmuel and he says, I fulfilled the word of Hashem. What in the world was Shaul saying? What was Shaul saying? He fulfilled the word of Hashem. It's one thing if you say, listen, I didn't fulfill the word of Hashem, but I have a good excuse. I felt the glarufa, all the justification. But he comes to Shaul, the first words out of his mouth, is when he sees Shmuel, I fulfilled the word of Hashem. What's he talking about? I fulfilled the word of Hashem. It's extremely difficult to understand what he means. And I guess perhaps the most simple explanation is that he felt that his argument, the kalvachomer that he made from Eglarufa, the argument that he made was correct and proper, and therefore he says it's still the word of Hashem. But it's still extremely difficult. And Mr. Hashem, we'll get back to it and try to... let's get moving. Pasuk Yudalet. Vayayim Shmuel Tehim, Umeh Kol HaTzayin Hazeh Be'oznoi. What's that sound of sheep that I hear in my ears? Right, a bit poetic. Shmuel says, if you fulfill the word of Hashem, why do I hear sheep? And the sound of the cattle that I hear. What's going on? You tell me you fulfilled the word of Hashem, so why do I hear the sheep and the cattle? From Amalek they brought them, that the nation had compassion, they spared the choicest sheep and cattle in order to sacrifice to Hashem, your God. Don't worry, everything else we destroyed, we eradicated, we got rid of everything else. So Shaul explains to Shmuel that the nation had compassion, they saved the choicest animals to sacrifice to Hashem. And just very quickly, Mesutis points out that actually Shaul here had two justifications. First of all, he said that it was a very noble intent why they saved the animals. They want to sacrifice them to Hashem as karbanos. They didn't save them for a bad reason, they didn't save them for selfish purposes, they wanted to become wealthy and keeping them. And second of all, he says, the people did it. It wasn't me, it was the people. Right? He says clearly, he says, Asher Cholam Ha'om Al Mitzav Asoy. The Mitzvah seems to say, the Malvin points it out as well, that it was the people, Cholam Ha'om, the nation, the people, they're the ones who spared the animals. And also, it was okay because it was the Man Zavoyach Hashem Elikecha, it was in order to sacrifice to Hashem, your God. Moving right along, source 19, Pasuk Tes Zayin. Vayimish Shmuel al Shaul. Shmuel said to Shaul, Heref. He says to him, wait, or desist. Ve'agidu l'cho eis asher diber Hashem elai haloilo. He says, okay, stop there. I'm going to tell you what Hashem told me last night. Vayim le daber. So, oh, the word of Hashem. Tell me, speak. So what does Shmuel say? Vayomer Shmuel. Shmuel says, Haloi, im kotoin ato be'inecho. Says, even if im kotoin ato be'inecho, if you're small in your eyes, roish shivtei Yisrael also. You are the head of the tribes of the Jewish people. Vayim shochach Hashem lemelech al Yisrael. Hashem has anointed you to be the king over the Jewish people. Let's go one more pasuk. We'll come back to this. Vayishlochach Hashem bedorach. Hashem sent you on a path, on a mission. And he said, and you should go and destroy the sinners, Amalek, Benelcham Tovoy, and fight against him at Haloisam Oisam. Until you destroy them, one more pasuk. Velomalei Shemata B'Kol Hashem, why didn't you listen to the voice of Hashem? Vata'at El Asholo, you hurried to the spoils, Vata'at Horah B'Ni Hashem, and you did what was bad in the eyes of Hashem. So what? What's Shmuel Hanavi? What's his response to Shaul? Shaul tries to justify his actions, the actions of the people. What Shmuel say to Shaul? His first reaction is Haloyim Kotayin Asabei Nechav. You're small in your eyes. Roish Shiv say Yisrael Ata. You are the leader of the Jewish people. Hashem made you the king. And it's a bit strange because you would think the first reaction should be no, you didn't do the right thing. No, Hashem told you to destroy them. You can't save them. But that's not the first thing that he says. He starts off with these words of "Im katzid atzadei nechav, you're small in your eyes, roish shivte Yisrael atzad." No, you're the head of the Jewish people. Hashem made you the king. So what did Shmuel mean? Why is that? Why was that his immediate reaction? Why is that his first response to Shaul? So perhaps based on what we just quoted from the Mesudas, that Shaul tries to justify himself by saying it was the people who did it. Shaul says that's not an excuse. That's not an excuse. You're the king, you're the leader, and you can't, you have to be the one who's in charge. You have to make the decisions, and not let people make the decisions. The Masudah says there that Shaul says, I couldn't stop them because they didn't know. And Shmuel responds to Shaul, and he says, no, you're the king, you're in charge, you have to do the right thing. It's still a bit difficult, because at the end of the day, the first thing should have been to say, no, it's wrong. Even if they want to bring the carbonus to Hashem, it's wrong. And then to explain to him, okay, I'm saying it's wrong, and also, you're the one who has to call the shots, not let the people call the shots. But it would still seem that the first reaction, the first thing that Shmuel should tell Shaul is that no, it's wrong. Even though they have good intentions to bring the carbonus, still it's wrong, it's not proper, you can't make such decisions, you have to follow the word of Hashem, and destroy, you should have followed the word of Hashem and destroyed all the animals. The fact that you want to bring them as karbanos is not a good excuse. Okay, so Hashem will get back to this, as time allows. So Shaul, as we'll see once again, Shaul tries to justify himself. He doesn't go down too easily. Pasuk Chaf, second to last line on page 6. Vayemer Shaul el Shmuel. Says to Shmuel, Asher Shamati b'koil Hashem, I listen to the voice of Hashem. The Mitzudei says, I'm sorry, that the Radak says, that Shaul here interrupted Shmuel. Shmuel, the Navi, was telling over the word of Hashem. He was in the middle, and Shaul interrupted him. He said, no, you say I did the wrong thing. I insist, I did the right thing. I listened to the voice of Hashem. I went in the path that Hashem sent me. Shmuel said to Shaul, Hashem sent you on the path, on a mission, and you didn't do it. He said, no, I did it. I brought Agog here. I didn't let Agog go free. I have him here in captivity. I mean, I can easily kill him. I brought Agog, the king of Amalek, and the rest of Amalek I destroyed. Again, the nation took. Again, he insists that it was the nation. They took from the spoils, the sheep and the cattle, the choicest of the spoils. It was the sacrifice to Hashem in Gilgal. It should bring his carbonis to Hashem. And Shaul insists that he was not wrong, that he did follow the word of Hashem. Shmuel says, "Hachevet to Hashem ba'olus zvachim kishmoya b'koil Hashem. Hachevet to Hashem is desired by Hashem ba'olus zvachim sacrifices kishmoya b'koil Hashem. Like listening to the voice of Hashem." The Rabbah explains that what's the ideal thing? The ideal thing is to listen to the word of Hashem. Karbonos, the person sins, the person brings the karbonos to make up for it. But the primary thing is to follow the word of Hashem. Hachemus Hashem, Boilus Zvachim, Kishmaya B'Kol Hashem, does Hashem want as much karbonos, sacrifices, Oilus and Zvachim, as he wants you to listen to the voice of Hashem? Hine behold Shemoya Mizevach Toiv. Shemoya, listening. Mizerach Toiv, it's better than Karbonis. Hashem wants more that a person should listen to him and do his word than they should bring Karbonis. L'hakshiv, to obey. Echelav Eilim, Hashem desires it more than the fat of rams. Which the Targum explains, that means listening to the words of the Navi. According to the Targum, Kishmaya is referring to listening to the word of Hashem. It's what Hashem says directly, but Hashem says in the Torah. Lahakshiv, to obey, is referring to the words of the Navi. What the Navi says, Hashem prefers that you listen to that, Nechel of Elim, than the fat of Ren. So the message, the clear message is that you can't decide what you want to do for Hashem based on what seems to you proper. You have to do what Hashem wants you to do. When Hashem commands something, you follow the word of Hashem. When Hashem says something to a Navi, you follow the word of the Navi. And because what seems in your mind to be better, what seems in your mind to be ideal and proper and the better way of doing things, you have to be mevatel your das. You have to be able to subjugate yourself to Hashem and follow the word of Hashem, even if it's contrary to what seems proper and appropriate to you. And that's one of the important messages of the Haftarah is, Hinei Shemoya Mizev Achtoyim. A lot of times the person has good intentions and he wants to do this other thing and he's going to accomplish all sorts of wonderful things. But the primary thing is Shemoya. The primary thing is Shemoya B'Kol Hashem, listen to the word of Hashem. First thing a person always has to check before he gets involved in something is it Shemoya B'Kol Hashem? Is it following the word of Hashem? Idealism is great, but it has to be within the context, it has to be within the confines of the word of Hashem, of the laws of the Torah, of the way the Torah wants a person to act and to conduct himself. It's nice to get in to do all sorts of wonderful things, but the primary thing is to stick to the Torah and to not lose that focus. Pasuk Chav Gimel says Kichatas Kesem Meri. Meri is rebelliousness. Kichatas Kesem, just like the sin of going to a sorcerer. Meri, rebellion is the same sort of sin. Just the sin of rebellion is just the same as Chatas Kesem, as the sin of going to a sorcerer. What does that mean? Is, again, different explanations, but more or less the idea is that just as someone goes to a Kesem, to a sorcerer, someone who follows sorcery is abandoning Hashem, it shows a lack of faith in Hashem. A person goes to a sorcerer to find out things, I mean, it's a lack of belief, a lack of trust in Hashem. So too, someone who is married, someone who is rebellious, rebels against the word of Hashem, doesn't follow the word of Hashem. Also, he shows a lack of belief that Hashem punishes the person. If he really believed that Hashem punishes, then he wouldn't rebel against Hashem. Or that he, just the fact that he doesn't follow the word of Hashem, he shows a lack of trust in Hashem, a lack of willingness to follow the word of Hashem. The oven usurafim haftar. Again, there's different explanations of the word haftar means. Haftar either is once again it means rebellion or lack of willingness to follow the word of Hashem. That's like the oven of shrafim, that's like idolatry. Shrafim are idols. Or alternatively, the Mepharshim say haftar means to add on. To add on the abundance. It means a lot. The oven of shrafim haftar, again, two different explanations. Either that it means that adding on to the word of Hashem is bad also, as if a person thinks he's doing better than what Hashem says, then that's just as bad as serving Avodah Zarah, as Rashi and others say. Or alternatively, according to the Suda, the Suda says an interesting thing. He says that haftar, meaning the more words, abundant words, abundant talking and trying to justify yourself and saying things that are not correct and that are not valid is just like idolatry. Just like idolatry, no matter how many idols you have, they're just as powerless. Right? Idols we know they have no power whatsoever. Right? They're completely worthless. But in the fact you don't have more of them doesn't make them any more powerful. So to haftar, idols keep on talking, keep on justifying yourself, trying to justify yourself and saying no, but they wanted to bring karbonis to Hashem, and it was the people who did it, trying to justify yourself, it's not going to work. So avinu shrafim haftar, to continue the abundant words of justification, they're not going to get you anywhere. They're just as, the fact that you keep on saying it over and over again is not going to make it more valid, is not going to make it better justification, just as idolatry, the worthless idols, don't become more valuable and more powerful because you have more of them. The more times you say it, doesn't make it better. Okay, there's a different explanation. I don't want to spend too much time on that. Yan mo'aslas v'an Hashem, because you rejected the word of Hashem, Vayim Oscha Mimelech. Therefore Hashem has rejected you as king. So here, Shmuel finishes his message that what Hashem had told him, what we saw previously, Hashem had told Shmuel that Hashem has now rejected Shaul as the king. Because he didn't follow the word of Hashem, Hashem has rejected him as the king. Here Shmuel tells Shaul that it's over. Your kingdom is over, Hashem has rejected you. You will not continue to be the king. Let's skip to page 8, Chav Gimel 23. Okay, we'll go through them a little bit quickly. Vayomer Shaul of Shmuel, Shaul, the king now says to Shmuel, Chatasi, finally he admits, I have sinned, Ki Avati Ki Hashem Nesvorecha, I have transgressed the word of Hashem and your words. So according to some of the Mepharshim, what he means to say is your words, in other words, that I apologize for contradicting you, I apologize for arguing with you and trying to justify myself. He says, again, even with the apology, even with the confession, I have sinned, he still says, he still some sort of justification, but still it was because I fear the people and I listen to their voice. Yeah, I don't know how many of you were there, but not this past time with Ali. He said with Ali before, Rabbi Langer gave a speech about confession, and he spoke about the contrast between David, the way David immediately confessed his sins, and the way Shaul was a bit slow into his sins. He went through all of these psukim. You can find that in that lecture. Now Sonor es Chatosi. He says, okay, please, pardon my sin, v'shuvi me and come back with me, v'shtachav al Hashem, and bow to Hashem. He said, okay, I confess to my sin, so now, at least come along with me, show me, give the impression, show that you are back with me, that you support me, and come, I'm going to bow in front of Hashem. That's what one of the Mepharshim says, I'm going to bow, I confess to you, now let me go bow in front of Hashem, and confess to him and do tshuva. But him is Shmuel, Shaul, Shmuel, and Novi says to Shaul, no, nothing doing. We also be enough. I'm not going to go back with you. Ki mo'asto es tavar Hashem. You have rejected the word of Hashem. By imosta Hashem mihi oismelech al Yisrael. Hashem has rejected you from being the king over the Jewish people. So Hashem rejected you. So I have to reject you as well. I will not come back with you. Ayisem Shmuel aleches. So Shmuel turned to go away. Finished. He said his peace. He turned to go away. Vayachazik bechnas miiva vayikora. He held on to the edge of his robe. And the simple understanding is that Shaul, the king, grabbed onto Shmuel's garment as he was turning away. He didn't want him to leave. He grabbed onto it, and it tore. In the Medrash Shmuel that we mentioned before, there's two different opinions about it. You can look in the Mepharshim here and see it for yourselves. Rashi brings it down one way, which doesn't seem to be accurate. I think it's Tzudeis and the Radak maybe bring it down a different way, which is the proper way. Yeah, I think it's Tzudeis and the Radak. They bring it down a different way. But the simple understanding is that Shaul grabbed onto Shmuel's robe and it tore. Vayimei lo Shmuel, Shmuel says to Shaul, Korah Hashem es ma'amluchus Yisrael me'olecha ayoyim. This is a sign that Hashem has torn away the kingship over the Jewish people from upon you today. And he has given it to your friend who is better than you. He'll do a better job. Begam, and also you should know, Netzach Yisroel, lo yishakev, lo yinochem, that the Netzach Yisroel, who is most of the Mepharshim, a reference to Hashem, either he's the might and the strength of the Jewish people, or that he's the eternal, he's Netzach, he's the everlasting God of the Jewish people, lo yishakev, he will not lie, lo yinochem, he will not change his mind. Hashem is not going to reverse his decision. The Rashi, based on the Targum, explains that perhaps he'll say, okay, I'll do tshuva, and Hashem will allow me to continue to be the king. Shmuel says to Shaul, nothing doing. Hashem's not going to change his mind. He already decreed that David HaMelech should take over for you and become the king, and therefore, lo yishakev, lo yinochem, Hashem doesn't lie, Hashem doesn't change his mind. Ki loy odom hu leinochem is not like a human being who changes his mind, depending on his mood, depending on the day. He'll change what he wants to do. He'll change his intentions. That's not the case with Hashem. Hashem is not going to change his mind. It's a final decision. Hashem has taken the kingdom away from you and given it to David HaMelech. Case 25. Vayoymer. Shaul sees that it's over. He says, Chatasi, I've sinned. Ata now kabdeni no neged ziknei ami v'neged Yisrael. So at least now show some honor to me. at least give me, and while as long as I remain the king, at least show me some honor, at least show some support for me, neged ami, in front, and then neged zikne ami, in front of the elders of my nation, neged Yisrael, in front of the Jewish people, v'shuv imi, and come with me, v'shtachavesi l'Hashem alikecha, and I will bow to Hashem, your God. V'yosef Shmuel acharei Shaul, Shmuel returned, he went together with Shaul, v'yisachu, Shaul l'Hashem, and Shaul bowed to Hashem. Now this time Shmuel does go with Saul. Perhaps he was waiting for him to give a complete confession. As we mentioned before, he gave a confession. He says, I sinned, but he said, oh, Shioresi, I was scared of the people. Over here he says, Chatasi, I sinned. That's it. So it could be, at this point, once he had a full confession, then Shmuel was willing to go with Saul. Vayeva Shmuel, Shmuel said, Hagishu Elag Melech Amalek, to bring in front of me Agag, king of Amalek, Vayelech Elov Agag Ma'adanois. So Agag went in front of him, Ma'adanis, according to the most unfortunate, Ma'adanis means that he was in chains, he was in shackles. There are adapted to other explanations, but we'll leave them for now. But anyway, Agag said, Ochein sor mar hamoves. He says, behold, or certainly, sor mar hamoves, the bitterness of death has turned. So the most unfortunate explained what that means is, he realized that his end had come. It says, "Sor my hamavis, the bitterness of death has now turned towards me." He realized that this was going to be the end of it. He had been spared till now. He was kept alive. But now he realized that Shmuel was going to kill him. So he realized that the bitterness of death has come to me now. The Rabbah says a very interesting thing. He says that at first, Agag was brought in front of Shmuel, and he thought Shmuel was going to kill him. He thought certainly the reason why they were bringing him to Shmuel was that he should be killed. But when he saw the righteousness and the compassion on Shmuel's face, he thought, okay, now I'm a good choice. If I'm being brought in front of such a kind, merciful person, certainly he's going to spare me. So he said, okay, in other words, that has turned away. The bitterness of death has turned away. Oh, I was ill here, I was all nervous, I was going to be killed, but now I see Shmuel, certainly he'll spare me. But he was wrong. Let's skip to now, Chachas 28. My name is Shmuel. Shmuel made a declaration. He says, so says your sword caused women to lose their children. You killed men, you killed people, sons and husbands. You caused women to lose their husbands and to lose their sons. So too, your mother will also lose her children, lose a child. Your mother will become like other women. Your mother will be like the other women that also tishkal, shall lose their children. Shmuel split Agog in front of Hashem in the Gilgal. He cut him in half, he chopped him in half, he wanted to make a real display to frighten off other nations. They shouldn't start up with this. Vashti being the magistrate, he cut him into four parts. But either way, whatever be it as it may, Shmuel killed Agog. Shmuel went back to Ramah, to his place, to Shaul, Ola El Beis, give Ashol. Shaul went back to his place, to give Ashol, and that's how the Avtaira ends. Shmuel rebukes Shaul, Shmuel informs Shaul, he gives him the bad news that he will no longer be the king, and at the end, Shmuel himself kills Agag. Okay, once again, anyone who needs to leave, wants to leave, is more than welcome to leave. I will not hold it against anybody if they leave, it's pretty late. I just wanted to get to some nice ideas here. So we'll try to end it soon, but anyone who would like to leave is welcome to leave. Okay, so let's go back a little bit. We had some very perplexing questions over here, which we need some answers to. First of all, why did Shaul do what he did? Why didn't Shaul follow the word of Hashem? So again, we quoted the Gemara, we quoted the Medrash, we tried to explain them, there were difficulties, but at the end of the day, word of Hashem from the Navi, why would Shaul do anything else? And further, we have to understand why was the kingdom taken away from him because of that. So just first, quickly, the Gemara in Yuma, the same Gemara in Yuma, the Gemara there says an interesting thing. The Gemara there says that, just without reading it aside, outside it goes quicker, the Gemara contrasts Shaul and David. Shaul did one sin, this sin of sparing Agag, of not killing Amalek, and David, again, the Gemara goes through, there were really more things, but two sins of David that he seems not to have been punished for. One of them was the fact that he orchestrated that Uriah Achiti should be sent to the front lines, he should be killed in battle. That was one thing. And also the fact that Hashem, through the Yetzer Hara, convinced David HaMelech to count the Jewish people when it was not appropriate, and that was a sin. The Gemara says that Shaul had one sin, and the kingdom was taken away from him. David, on the other hand, had two sins, and the kingdom was not taken away from him. David continued to be king. So why? This is a big question. Why? And one of the more popular answers to the question is that Shaul's sin was in an area that was related to the kingship. He sinned in an area that was related to the kingship, as opposed to David, whose sins were what we'd call a personal sin, sins in his personal life that weren't necessarily related to the kingship. Therefore, Shaul, if he sinned in an area that was related to the kingship, so the Malchus being the king, so the kingdom was taken away from him. David, his sins were not related to the kingship, so therefore the kingdom was not taken away from him. So why exactly was Shaul's sin related to the kingship? Why was it a sin that had to do with being king? So the most simple explanation is that the commandment to destroy Amalek is incumbent upon the king. So since there was a failing, a shortcoming in this mitzvah of kingship, it blames on the king. It's a lack of it's a shortcoming. It's a failure in his kingship, and therefore he was punished for it. But not everyone holds that way. It's not agreed. By all of the opinions that it's a mitzvah incumbent upon the king. There are those who say it's incumbent upon the entire Jewish people. So why was it a thing that's related to the kingship? So one idea which I heard a number of years ago, must be 11 years ago by now, 11 years ago from Reb Zalig Epstein, the Chassadik Lavracha, the Shiva and Yeshiva Shara Torah in Queens, New York, one of my rabbeim. And he said the following is based on the Chassam Sefer. The Chassam Sefer is in the Joshua Chassam Sefer. It's been found in the Chassam Sefer Torah as well. The Chassam Sefer says the following. It's a bit surprising, a bit of a chiddush, but he says the following. One of the big questions is, what was Shaul thinking? And the Chassam Sefer says the following. He says, although the language of the Gemara, language of the Medrash, seems to indicate, we spoke about by Yoreh Ban Achal, that Shaul had this argument, so to speak, with Hashem in the valley, which he argued that the Kavachaymer, the Kavachaymer from Eglah Arufa, and he said if the men sin, did the women sin, if the older people sin, did the young children sin. Some people understand either perhaps that once Shaul expressed these concerns, once he revealed to the people that these were things that bothered him, so then it became an issue of public opinion. That the Jewish people started thinking like that as well. It bothered them, bothered the Jewish people, that how could it be that Hashem would command us to kill the entire Amalek? To kill the entire people, men, women, and children, the animals as well. This is something that bothered the people a lot. It didn't make sense to them. Says the Chassam Sofer, Pasuk says in Parashas Ki Tzavo, Yor Asher LaYokim Mesivri HaPer HaZayt. Christ is someone who doesn't uphold the Torah. What does that mean? Not only does the person have to himself, but he has to ensure that the Torah is upheld in others as well. He has to make sure, a person has an obligation to make sure that other people keep the Torah as well. And he says that the reverse is true as well. The person who upholds the Torah is blessed. The person has an obligation to ensure that others keep the Torah as well. Says the Chassam Sofer, Shaul made the following calculation. He said if we go ahead and follow the word of Hashem, it's going to be bad news. The Jewish people, they're going to have a bad taste, so to speak, towards the Torah, through the mitzvahs of Hashem. They're going to think that the Torah tells us to do things that are mean and sadistic. And that the people are going to get a very bad impression of the Torah, and it's going to detrimentally affect their commitment to the Torah, their commitment to Hashem. They're going to think that, Chas v'Shalom, they're going to think this is ridiculous. Hashem told us to do, to kill out the entire nation, men, women, and children. It doesn't make any sense. It's unfair, it's mean, it's inhumane, so on and so forth. Chas v'Shalom, these are the things that people are going to say. So Shaul HaMelech relied on the rule of, we know that Chazal tell us We know that the writing of Teirush Baal Peh, right, Teirush Baal Peh, the Mishnah in the Gemara, really it's not supposed to be written down. How are we allowed to write it down? It's not permitted. It's also to write down. Dvarim, right, you're not allowed to write down the Dvarim that are Baal Peh, the Teirush Baal Peh is not allowed to be written down. So how is it written down? Right, we have a concept called Eslas Eslas Hashem, Heiteyu Teirush Sechel. When it comes to time to do from Hashem, Heiteyu Teirush Sechel, we can push aside the explicit commands in the Torah, and we could do what's necessary for the continuity, for the word of Hashem to be upheld. Now, they understood at the time of the writing down of the Mishnah and the Gemara that it was an Eis L'Ashis L'Hashem. If they were going to keep it Baal Peh, if it wouldn't be written down, people would forget it. They said it was an Eis L'Ashis L'Hashem, so they could push aside the prohibition against writing down the Teirush Baal Peh. So here also, Tzedek Chassam Sefer, Shaul felt this was a legitimate Eis L'Ashis L'Hashem, a time to do for Hashem. He saw that the morale amongst the Jewish people, their attitude, would be very detrimentally affected if they would go ahead with destroying Amalek. And so therefore, Shaul made the decision that despite the fact that the clear command from Hashem to destroy Amalek, it's for the better of the future of the Jewish people, in order for the Jewish people to continue keeping the Torah properly, it's necessary that we don't fulfill the command of Hashem completely in this instance. That's what's necessary. In the big picture, in the long run, it's better to push aside this command of Hashem and not fulfill it completely so that in the future the Jewish people will continue to observe the Torah and to keep it properly. Now, he said he relied upon the rule of Eslas Eslas Hashem Heiteyu Teirush Sechel. It's the time to do for Hashem, and therefore Heiteyu Teirush Sechel, therefore we can push aside the explicit command of Hashem. According to this, as Sam Seifer, according to that we can understand, if you look back in page 5, right, so we said, when Shmuel meets up with Shaul later on, what are Shaul's first words to Shmuel? He says, Baruch atol Hashem, hakimoisi esvar Hashem. Blessed are you to Hashem, Hashem should bless you, I have upheld the word of Hashem. So he said, what does he mean he upheld the word of Hashem? Hashem told him to do one thing and he didn't do it. He says, I upheld the word of Hashem. I did what was necessary to make sure the Jewish people should continue to fulfill the word of Hashem. You know, I didn't do exactly what Hashem said, but I upheld the word of Hashem. I made it possible for the Jewish people to continue following the word of Hashem. I made it possible for the Jewish people to continue following the Torah. If I would have gone through with killing Amalek, completely destroying them, the Jewish people, they would have gone off. They would have said, well, we can't do this. It makes no sense to us. It doesn't seem nice to us. But I upheld the word of Hashem by holding back, by sitting back and not destroying Amalek completely. I upheld the word of Hashem. I allowed for the possibility of the Jewish people to continue to follow the Torah. They won't have that bad taste, they won't have that attitude towards the Torah, and they'll continue to follow the Torah properly. So what was the response to that? Is his argument really flawed? In what way is his argument flawed? So that's where, if you turn to the next page, page 6, what was Shmuel's response? We were bothered by Shmuel's response as well. Shmuel responds, Haloyim kotoy nata be'inecho, roi shivte yisroel oto, vayim shokach la'ashem l'melech al yisroel. What's Shmuel's response? His immediate response is not, no, you did the wrong thing. His immediate response was, you have a good calculation. What you said is all true, except for one point. What's that one point? In kotoy nata be'inecho, you're too small in your eyes. Roi shivte yisroel oto. You're the leader of the Jewish people. You can't be pushed around by the people. You can't be led by the people. Their opinion can't cause you to follow. It's your opinion that has to lead them. It's your job. If you feel that the Jewish people, they're going to have the wrong attitude, if you feel that the Jewish people, that they're going to have a bad taste towards it, you have to educate them. You have to influence them. You have to teach them. It's your job as the Roi Shivtei Yisrael, as the king of the Jewish people, as the leader, it's your job, says Shmuel Hanavi to Shaul HaMelech, it's your job. It's not an excuse that they're going to get the wrong impression. It's not an excuse because it's your job to be the leader. It's your job to guide them, to instruct them, to inspire them, to make sure they don't get the wrong impression, to make sure that they realize that following the word of Hashem is always the proper thing to do. Always in the long run, it's the best thing to do, to follow the word of Hashem. No matter how it seems to you, how bad it seems to you, how mean, how sadistic, how inhumane it seems to you, if it's the word of Hashem, it's the right thing, it's the proper thing. It's your job to impress that upon the people. It's your job to guide them and make sure they get that message. The fact that you could consider it to be that The fact you consider it to be a situation of a slashes lashem, the fact that you think that as a result the soul will go off, it'll have the wrong impression of the Torah, that's not an excuse. If that would be true, then you're right. But that can't be. Such a situation cannot be. You cannot have a situation where the Jewish people have the wrong message, because it's your job as the king to teach them, to inspire them, to guide them, to show them the proper way, and to make sure they don't have any such ideas. In Kotan Atadei Necha, you may be small in your eyes, Roy Shifta Yisrael Atta, you have to step into your role as king, and you have to guide them and instruct them and make sure that they have the proper message, they have the proper direction, that they understand properly that the word of Hashem is always the best thing, and there's no other way about it. And that was Shmuel's message to Shaul. That's the mistake over here. Everything else, you're right. All the calculations you made are correct, except the fact that you can't see yourself as being so small. Anova is a great thing, as my Rebbe Zelig Tzal pointed out. Anova is a great thing. You look at the field, Yesharim, it's from the highest levels. Anova, humility, is from the greatest things. You look at the sources of the Gemara, you go through all the various sources. Anova is a tremendous thing. It's a great thing. Moshe Rabbeinu, being the honor of Nikol Adam, Anova, as we mentioned before, is the number one quality that's necessary for a person to have Ashrat Hashchina, for Hashem to rest Hashchina on a person. Anova is a tremendous thing. Despite that, it has time and place. Anova is in the proper situation, the proper time, it's great and it's necessary. But there's sometimes where humility, where anova is not the proper thing. Over here, in Kotah Atadei Necha, you're being too humble. You think that, no, I can't guide them. I can't teach them. I can't change their mind. I can't influence them the proper way. I can't show them what's right. No, this is not the time and place for it. That's not the role of the king. The role of the king is to step up, to be the lev ha'am, to be the heart of the people, and to guide the people, to show the people, to influence them, to show them what's right, to teach them, give them the proper mahalach hachayim, the proper approach to life, to know that the word of Hashem is the only thing that is relevant, is the only thing that's important. If you don't understand it, that's your problem. You still have to follow the word of Hashem, and you have to understand that it's the best thing, and it's all that there is. And that's the message of the Bnei Necha, Roy Shifta Yisrael also, that a person, you can't be too small in your eyes, and it applies to every single person. It's not limited to Shaul as the king. Every person in his role in life, every person is granted by Hashem, is given abilities, the person is given his lot in life, the person is given his job in life to accomplish certain things. And a person can't look at himself as being too small. And Kotin Atadei Necha, don't be too small in your eyes. Don't think, me, how can I accomplish? How can I achieve things? No. Rosh Shiv take Yisrael also, okay? Maybe you're not the Melech, but you are who you are. You are who you are, and you were given certain gifts by Hashem, you're given certain jobs by Hashem, you're given certain abilities by Hashem. And don't refrain from fulfilling those abilities. Don't refrain from using them because you see yourself as being too small to accomplish. A person has to see in himself the potential that he has, the abilities that he has, the strength that he has. He has to use those to serve Hashem. He has to use those, whether it's to influence others, whether it's to influence his family, his friends, his community, whoever it might be, whoever it is, even for himself, for his own avodas Hashem, never see himself as being too small, as being too unfit. The person has to be realistic, has to see the strength and the powers that Hashem gave him, and Hashem has to use them to serve Hashem. It's really something we find in the Gila as well. This is my own observation, that Mordechai and Esther, the whole conversation that goes back and forth between them after Haman's decree was made, that Mordechai was mourning after Haman's decree, he was wearing his sackcloth and ashes. And he sends a message to Esther that Esther should go in front of the king to plead on behalf of the Jewish people in front of him. And Mordechai says, and Esther says to Mordechai, no, I can't, I haven't been called. I haven't been called in so long, and no one can go in front of the king and be spared. So Mordechai sends a message back to Esther, Al-Tadam, even after, he always based on Melech Mikola Yehudim. Mordechai sends a message to Esther, don't think that you can hide in the king's palace and you'll be spared. He says, okay, if you're quiet, someone else will get the job done for us. But what is the ending words? Who knows if this is the exact reason why you became the queen? And the person always has to realize and consider the fact, if a person sees the situation, no, I can't do that, that's not for me. A person always has to think, maybe this is my job in life. Maybe this is what I'm here for, to accomplish this, to be able to do this. person has to adopt the mindset, not in cutting out the beinecha, good. Humility is good sometimes, but a person always has to be ready to step up to the plate. A person has to see in himself the abilities. A person sees himself the power to influence others, to grow himself. And avodah zarah Hashem, a person has to step up to the plate. Don't think it's not for me. Don't think I'm too small for that. I'm incapable. No. Who knows if it's this, for this purpose that you were put in the world, for this purpose that you were given your strength and your abilities to serve Hashem and to influence others to serve Hashem properly.
My pleasure, Ellie.